Okay. Time now for the Border News Roundup. Friday mornings, we get a chance to check in with Marshall Helmberger. He's the editor and publisher of the Timberjay. That's a newspaper serving northeastern Minnesota. Marshall, great to talk to you again after the holiday.
Well, good to be here, Heidi.
We'll talk at the end about how much time you've been spending in the snow, in the great snow conditions. Mm-hmm. But up first, a story that's going on in St. Louis County and many counties around the state having to do with this, the refugees and counties voting on this. In Beltrami County, they voted against allowing refugee resettlements, which isn't actually happening. It's just this, as you put it, a big nothing burger, I think. but I wonder if you can explain a little bit what's going on in St. Louis County. What are you hearing?
Yeah. Well, the St. Louis County Board took up this issue on Tuesday, and after hours of public input on it, ended up voting 4-3 to table it. The County Board does plan to take it up again in May. And at that point, they hope to make a decision either to approve a motion that would allow refugee resettlement, or a motion that would deny refugee resettlement. In the end, the motion is largely symbolic, since for the most part, refugees are not being resettled in rural places, at least in Minnesota. And haven't been for years. The last time there was a refugee resettled in St. Louis County was in 2011. And we weren't talking about large numbers. I think we were talking one. So, I mean, to say this is a nothing burger is pretty accurate. I mean, however this vote comes out, it doesn't really make any difference in the question of whether refugees are going to be resettled in St. Louis County, because for the most part, they aren't. But it all came about because of a executive order that President Trump issued back in September that, required every state and county in the entire country to vote one way or another on whether they would accept refugees. As in St. Louis County and other counties, the vote has almost no bearing on the issue of refugees. In fact, there are a lot of folks, looking at this who say this isn't even about refugees, that it's more of a campaign tactic by President Trump that designed to get people, worked up, essentially, over refugee resettlement by forcing every single county in the country to pass this. And and it's amazing what happened here in St. Louis County. I mean, this, had originally been thought it would just, breeze through. It wasn't very controversial. I mean, by approving this resolution to allow refugee resettlement, it was simply just, keep in place the status quo, because, counties have always been open, in a technical sense, to refugee resettlement. It just, even if it wasn't happening. But the outpouring of opposition, mostly in phone calls and emails to commissioners, especially in the northern parts of St. Louis County, was somewhat overwhelming. I mean, at the public hearing they had on the issue on Tuesday in Duluth, most of the speakers actually were in favor of passing the motion, but in other parts of St. Louis County, there clearly was quite a bit of opposition. I talked to our local commissioner here, Paul McDonald. He said his office received about 200 phone calls, mostly in opposition, and then lots of emails on top of that. So clearly that people were exercised about this issue, even if the significance of it was essentially non-existent. So if this was, as people say, if this was a political tactic by President Trump, it seems to be working, and getting folks who are anti-immigrant definitely engaged and organized, and maybe that was part of the intent. But at this point, I know Commissioner McDonald said, he's just hoping, and the reason he voted for a delay on this was because he wants more time to be able to talk to constituents so they understand the significance or lack of significance, I guess, of this motion to allow refugee resettlement. Like I said, it just maintains the status quo. It doesn't really change anything. And it doesn't mean a single refugee is coming to St. Louis County. But clearly, he said, people don't understand that at this point. And he said that's why they voted to delay this, just to give, you know, commissioners more time to talk to constituents and allay some of the fears that were being spread.
Can you, I don't know if you even want to delve into this, but why do you think something like this happened? What could it do in terms of the 2020 elections?
Well, I mean, you know, you think about it. I mean, any time you're, you know, a politician running for office, one of the things you want to do is to mobilize your supporters. And one of the ways you do that is through, you know, hot-button issues. You know, I mean, this has been a tried-and-true political strategy for years. And clearly, I mean, I'd say there's really, in my book, there's really not much question here, but that was the intent of this is, you know, is to get folks who are anti-immigrant, and of course, you know, President Trump obviously made a concerted effort to focus on that issue and to exploit fears that people have of immigrants as part of his, you know, political campaign in 2016, and we're obviously seeing more of the same, you know, this time around. So, I mean, I clearly think that there's a strategy here and that it may be effective.
Well, and many counties, we'll be hearing more about this. So St. Louis County, late May, they'll be voting on this again. Is that right?
That's correct. So we'll probably touch base on this issue again at that time.
Sounds good. Well, let's move on to a story. This is also one I've been seeing in many towns, including Ely. It has to do with the closings of Shopko buildings and what communities might do with them. What's happening in the Ely area?
Well, at this point, mostly a flurry of some media interest in the subject. It originated with one of the city officials who had contacted a couple of the local newspapers, including ours, and had indicated that the Shopko building, the former Shopko building in Ely, had been sold. And the initial rumor was that it was going to become a True Value hardware store. We did report on the sale based on the comments that we had gotten or the information we had gotten from the city. We did not report that it was a True Value, but another paper in Ely actually did report that it was going to be a True Value hardware store. We've since confirmed that it's not going to be a True Value hardware store. And we've also confirmed that it's not actually sold at this point. The owner did indicate that it's under contract, but a sale has not yet been finalized, so we'll be staying on this story for a while, you know, to make sure that that we report it as soon as we do have confirmation of a sale. But you know, these buildings are difficult. I mean, you know, they're large, which means that you know, only a major retailer, for the most part, would be interested in a building of the size of a Shopko. And you know, that the retail environment has become increasingly difficult as it is, you know, we're seeing brick and mortar stores closing all over the country, and a lot of major retailers are losing money. So, you know, it makes it challenging to come up with redevelopment solutions for these properties. But you know, the building in Ely, it's not very old. It was only probably built about 6 or 7 years ago. And, you know, so it certainly would be a very viable outlet for a significant retailer.
Yeah, I remember when some of those Shopkos went up, I was surprised. It seemed like a strange thing when JCPenney's and Herberger's were closing, and there's a one in Aiken that I pass by if I'm headed to the mm-hmm. Twin Cities, and same with them. And it'll be interesting to see if people can repurpose them. I mean, in terms of jobs as well as people who live here and don't, you know, I don't think everybody wants to order online everything, so.
Yep. Well, and I think what, you know, the Shopkos in particular, they really went into smaller communities, under 10,000 population for the most part, that were relatively isolated, where people didn't, have ready access to another big box retailer. So, that was kind of their niche, was to serve these smaller communities. And, it's one thing to order online, but, that may be convenient in some ways, but still it's, a few days before you get it. But if you need something right now and you had the shop go down the street, that was pretty convenient.
Yeah. Well, another story we heard from you earlier this year, or the end of 2019, about the lack of pine grosbeaks at your feeder, but also at many people's feeders. The Christmas bird counts just recently happened. What kind of things did you hear from the people involved?
Well, for one thing, we confirmed that there are very, very few pine grosbeaks in the area. In fact, of all the bird counts, there were only six pine grosbeaks sighted, and those were at one feeder, sighted by one person. So I think that confirmed that theory. And it was typical of a lot of the northern finches as well. There were very few evening grosbeaks. And, of course, they've been on the decline for a while. As I had reported back in December, I don't think the disappearance of pine grosbeaks this year is related to any decline in the population. There was some reporting out of Canada that said that that the food sources in their summer range for the pine grosbeak were excellent this year, and that the prediction was that they were just going to stay put. They're hardy birds; they don't have to travel south as long as they have sufficient food in their regular range. So I think that's what's happened this year, and hopefully next year we should see plenty of pine grosbeaks. But it is interesting to keep tabs on these changes in movements of these birds. Some of the other things that were kind of interesting from some of the area bird counts was the fact that blue jay numbers are just out of sight. I mean, people were setting records in terms of the number of blue jays. And I've certainly seen that at our feeder. I mean, we've had just enormous numbers of blue jays the last few years. The other thing, too, was there were substantial increases in the number of gray jays, which was good news as well, because they'd been sort of on the decline in recent years, and there'd been some concern that maybe they were starting to disappear, but they rebounded quite nicely, and that's a phenomenon we've also noted at our house. I think we have like seven different gray jays that come to our house, to our feeders every day, so we've been enjoying that. A few other little interesting ones. There were some of the northern owls, like hawk owls. I know the Cook bird count, they had a couple different hawk owls. They also had a number of black-billed magpies, which we're always kind of interested in them because we're right on the edge of their range. Over in the Cook area, you run into black-billed magpies. By the time you get over to Tower, that's pretty much out of their range. So we're right on that dividing line, which is kind of interesting to keep tabs on that. So all in all, most people said they actually saw probably as many or more birds, in fact, more species in some cases than in past years, even though those winter finches seem to have kind of stayed a little bit north of our area this winter.
That is Marshall Helmberger. This has been the Border News Roundup. You can read and see more at timberjay.com. We'll do a little tease for next week. Your dog, Loki, has the fungal disease, Blasto, right?
Yes, that's true.
And we'll get an update. He's doing okay right now, though, right?
Doing okay, getting better.
Okay.
But it's been, he's been feeling it, that's for sure.
Okay, well, we'll check in about the news and Loki next week.
Sounds good.
Okay, thanks, Marshall.
Thanks, Heidi.